Todd, it's funny. We heard from Craig Conroy a little earlier, and he talked about how, hey, it is different this year. Things are a little bit different this year because you're not centralized, because the draft is decentralized. But what about for you and your scouting team? Does anything change? Does it feel any different for your group in 2025 than the way it usually goes?
Well, not in terms of what we're here for, but I'm a big fan of the being one place, all the teams there.
Yeah.
You know, I always say the stewards of our game don't make a lot of mistakes, but I've been working in this league since the late 80s, so they're pretty on the mark, but I don't like this one.
Yeah. What do you think this is the one time only? There's some buzz that this might be the only time they do it like this.
Well, the last time there was buzz, it was that they were going to go to the decentralized
draft. That's true.
It turned out. So I hope so. I think it's a unique thing for the NHL. I think it's a great event. I think it's when the players come down, like Luke Meese even told me, fifth round pick, I come down. The fans are cheering. I get a jersey. I meet everybody at the table.
Yeah.
The lights are going. He said it was just an unreal feeling. And you don't get that, right? You don't get the Dustin Wolf moments and four picks from the last pick, and he gets a big cheer. So I think that's what you miss. And again, it's unique to the pro sports drafts, where it's the best draft in the world and for pro sports. And I miss that part, but in terms of the work we have to do, it doesn't matter where we are. We could be in a cave somewhere in the mountains. So
what's the setup look like upstairs?
Tight. But you know what? We did this. We did this twice, right?
During the COVID drafts.
It's not new to us as far as of how we're operating and doing our meeting and stuff. And it'll be the same as it was during COVID, maybe a little fancier. Like, our people do a great job, our internal people, of setting everything up with the banners and everything. So it'll be good from that perspective. Once we're on the floor and it's drafts, it'd be just like sitting in the table.
Okay. You were poking fun with us before we hit record about how, hey, I talked to you like yesterday, and we did. It was in June when we talked to you. You were at the combine, and we were kind of going through what the combine means to you and your amateur scouting group. Now that you've had a few weeks removed from the combine, I guess just take us through this year. And because things are a little bit different, and because you won't be able to get any FaceTime with prospects at the draft city, did that change anything the way that you guys went about your business this year?
We never put anything off. We had to get everything done before we got here. So in terms of, let's follow up with an interview with a kid in Calgary or kids we didn't meet at the combine or whatever, we did that all already. So because we knew we wouldn't have that, you know, come to our hotel at 1 and have a meeting. So we've done all that. We had to do a lot of it by Zoom, especially with some of the Europeans who didn't come over for the combine, or the Russians who played in the Russian league. So so that part was changed, as far as we don't have any personal interviews here, but that's the only thing. But we did it all ahead of time, so it doesn't change any of the results or make it any harder or easier. Actually, it gives us a little more time.
Yeah. Anything change on the list? I mean, you'd said that, honestly, not much changes at the combine. Did anything kind of get altered between Buffalo and coming here?
a little bit, but like, when we go to the combine and we have our final list, we've already done, like, when you ask the question, when people ask the question, okay, does anything change after an interview? No. But we've probably, all the guys that were concerned interview-wise or with their characters, they're probably not on our list anyway. So it's not like the guys we interview at the combine, we like them. We want to get to know more. So that's not going to change that much. But we have Rick Davis's report. We have Daniel Fujita put her final report in. So we have, I guess, the thing I told you guys, we're probably 90% done. Now we're done now. So we had meetings here, but it was just to sort through three or four guys or a position, like make sure the defensemen are in the right order. And like I've said in the past, you can have four types of defensemen that are all really good players, but they're all different types. Big 6'5" defensemen, puck movers, offensive skill, right? Like, so that's the hardest part, to rank those guys, because they're all equal in terms of what they're going to be in the NHL as far as like good players, but they're different styles. So you want to rank, you have to rank those. And that's where the decisions here, we put them in groups, and now we did that. Same with the center, same with the wingers, same when you got to meld the wingers and the centers and defensemen, different types. So it's that was the process when we got here, started our meetings on Tuesday.
Okay, we're chatting with Todd Button. He is the director of amateur scouting for the Calgary Flames, getting set for the 2025 NHL draft, which goes Friday and Saturday. So every year I get the opportunity to chat with you, usually the day before the first round, and I ask you the same question every year, and you know, you always joke that, hey, it's like going to give you the same answer every year. But like, how do you evaluate when you take a broad look at the class of 2025? How would Todd Button describe the group of players that you'll have at your selection this year?
I'm happy. I'm excited about the group. I think it's a good group of players, and I think there's a lot of players that have room to grow. Sometimes you think players have, you sort of know what they are, and those are usually the top players, those like top 10, 12, 14 guys. This year maybe it was a little less in that area, but we're still excited. As we were excited about some of the guys, we like taking Gradin last year and Basher, who we had rated in the top 25, mm-hmm. like we still, there's still those types of players. So I know globally they're not, oh, these guys are superstars. Well, that's the whole point of the draft, and that's the whole point of scouting, and the way we're trying to operate is to find those hidden gems, find the guy at 28 or 29 like Gradin last year who people might have 45, and that's the whole process at work. So I'm excited about the draft. I'm excited about having, at the present time, we have 18 and 32 and then 54, and then so our group's excited too. Like I can tell when you're in the meetings, because they're engaged,
right? Yeah.
Like, and there's a lot of good banter, and they want to put their players forward and everything, and so you can tell when the whole group's engaged like that. Like I told you last year, like it was really good. Like the meetings seem to fly by. When you're picking your first picks in the fourth round, you're pulling teeth. You know, come on, like who do you guys like? Well, you got to be ready in case you move up. And they're like, yeah, we're not moving up 65 spots. And that's right. It's true, right? So anyway, I'm excited about it.
Connie said more recently, lots of slamming the table and a little bit more like guys are fighting a little bit more for their guys now, right?
Yeah, you can try, yeah, for lack of a better term, you can create a little chaos in there and pit guys against each other and see how it unfolds. And you're just trying to test to see how much a guy's really want somebody, right? You're not,
right.
It's not, it never gets personal. It's just that this guy's this and this guy's that. And in some of the cases, the scouts, you want them to find their voices because some of them don't see the other guys. So they don't know, like Terry Doran wouldn't know some of the guys in the West. So he's trying to talk about his player and evaluate him, and the West guys are doing the same thing. So it gets heated from when you can have the crossover guys start talking against them. But as far as, like, again, you could tell the excitement in the scout's voices when he's talking about a player.
Yeah. So where do you, and I know you kind of touched on it there, where do you see the ledges? Like, where do you see the groupings of players this year without obviously getting too specific and giving things away?
Well, I think there's one clear defenseman.
Yep.
And then there's a bunch of forwards. And then after, I'm going to say 11, 12, it's just going to scatter. And, you know, when you're golfing and you have the cart and you're going down and it says scatter, that's how this draft's going to go. There's going to be a guy we have 14 on our list and another team has 36. And it's more defensemen come into play after, like, the top defenseman, Schaefer, and then the next group of forwards, so we talk about ledges, then it's wide open. Then it's centers, still a center strong draft at the top, and then you have defensemen and wingers. So it just gets wide open after, like I said, 11, 12.
So where you're picking 18 and 32 on Friday, that's probably pretty exciting for your group because of that factor.
Right? It is, and that's why the mantra best player available is because there's every position. That's why.
Yeah.
So we have to do it like that because, again, you're going to get a top center, top right wing, top left wing, different types of defensemen. So
don't know. I don't know if this would be news to you or not, but in this market, there is a significant amount of focus on the center ice position going forward. You said deep center ice draft in terms of the way your group looks at it?
I think so. And I've been through this before. We went through this the years leading up to Sam Bennett and Monty and Mark Jankowski. And so it's not something – a few guys have been through that with us. So, again, we've learned not to push the center position just because of the center position. And Connie's been really strong and adamant at the meetings. Hey, best player. We'll get the center later if we need him or whatever the case may be. Don't force anything. Don't force defensemen. There was a stretch where we didn't take defensemen or didn't fall on our list for a bunch of years, and we didn't force it. So we're not going to force it, but I think it is.
Okay.
I think there's really like 7, 8, 9 really good center icemen in the top 35, 40.
Okay.
And then, but I think there's a lot after that too.
You kind of have to do it like that, don't you? Like, forcing things seems to be the way to not have a productive draft. Like, you kind of have to go out of your way to make sure that you're not forcing things, I would imagine.
It is, but for example, say your team, your big team, and I've been through this before, like, you have a good team, but you have trouble scoring. So are you trying to force getting more offense, or are you giving up a better two-way player to get a one-dimensional offensive player because your big team lacks scoring? So you can't do that. You can't build the team through the draft, right? The guy we picked today is not going to be filling one of our weaknesses next year on the big team.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes it intersects. Like, I remember back with when Brad Treliving, we talked about when we picked Matty Coronato, and we were short on the right side. We didn't have a lot of right-hand shots. We didn't have a lot of skill on the right wing, and it intersected. The pick intersected. We didn't force Matty. That's where it fell, and we filled that. And that was good. But if you force it, as I'm sure most teams have done in the past, then you make a mistake.
Just a few more with Todd Button, the director of amateur scouting. You said, like, a lot of focus, obviously, on day one, the first round, all that type of stuff. But you're pretty excited about how things evolve into day two, into the triple digits, so on and so forth.
And you know how we operate. Like, I believe our scouts have to have a say. I believe they do all the work during the years. During the season, they're the ones out there in the hotels and on the highways. So they have to have a say. They have to. And you know, we've operated like that for quite a few years, and it's paid off. And, you know, sometimes our crossover list is 1 to 65, and we follow that to the end. This year, I think it's a little bit less than that. So those guys will get to take over a little sooner. And I'm excited about that because I know they're excited about putting a stamp. Like, they get to say, they get Terry Dorn, Patrick Lachance, Darren Kruger, they get to say, hey, that I had a big say in that pick. So I like it when we can turn it over earlier.
The player that you get with your first pick, as of right now, is 18th overall. Obviously, there's all kinds of different positions that you'll have to choose from. You just talked about how crucial best player is. But what type of impact player do you think you'll be getting at number 18?
Okay, I think we're going to get an offensive forward. If it's a forward, it's going to be an offensive guy. It's going to be skilled. Like, you really don't want to. I mean, sometimes it happens. Just you think a guy's going to be more skilled, and then he ends up being a third line guy, which is fine, right? So, but the evaluation has to be he's going to be offensive or skill, have a lot of skill and upside, right? And in defense, it's the same thing. Defensemen still have to play defense, right? You look at for sure, the special guys in the NHL, the Makars and those guys, they're different. There's not going to be, I doubt there's going to be a Makar at 18, but there's going to be good defensemen. So we're going to get a good player. We are, and it's going to be a guy with upside. And also, if it's a forward, it's going to be I say he leans more to the offensive side than the defensive side. It might end up being a second line guy. I don't know. Like, as far as how they develop, but our evaluation is it's going to be a good player.
Okay. The last year, you end up coming away with the 10 players. Connie makes the one move to add another pick to get you to 10. And on the outside, because every year you're really happy about the draft that you have, but on the outside, people are given the Flames draft A's, A pluses. Like, people loved the class of 2024. Does your group care about that? Like, do you guys, when you see that, are you like, oh, that's a little validation? Or do you kind of have to not pay attention to what's being said on the outside?
Well, if I pay attention to the good stuff, then I have to pay attention to the bad stuff.
Right.
And I don't want to do that, right? So
fair.
The thing about fans, and you talked about this market earlier, is they're very knowledgeable, right? And there's way more information out there as far as the draft. They can watch guys on video. They can watch. They see all. There's hundreds of public. Not hundreds, but there's lots of public lists. These people grow up around hockey. They know what they're talking about. So you're not going to BS them, right? They know. But so, yeah, it feels good when everybody's saying that. But the next two 3 years is going to tell the tale.
Yeah.
Not the excitement after the draft. You always want your fan base to be excited. You always want your management. Because the truth is some of our management don't know these players very well. So they're going by what we're telling them in the meetings. And they're getting excited about that. So when they're excited, for sure. I mean, we were excited about it. We're happy that everybody's saying positive things. It's good. It's good, right? Like I said, I've been on the other side. So, but I can't take it either way. This is our job. This is what we're paid to do. And we do it all with the best intentions.
You, as you mentioned, you've got the 7 picks this year in this year's draft. You had 9 going into last year. You finish with 10. Your group is always ready. If Craig makes a move up or down, you're always ready to pounce. But that's second straight year with a good amount of picks. Always adds to the buzz going into the weekend, doesn't it? When you've got a good chunk of picks.
And the one thing it does in terms of for our purposes, you can be aggressive to move up. So we got 18 and 32. If something happens, like we'll go over it this afternoon, just the strategy where we want to like to get into up to, like where are the players, would you give up 18 and 32 to get how high to get which group of players. So we'll get into that. But the more picks you have, the more chances you have to propose to move up 6 spots or 4 spots. If you don't have the picks, you can't. You just wait, right? You just check guys off. So that's the best part about having a lot of picks.
If you were to go have a nap right now and not wake up until like 4 o'clock tomorrow, would you still be ready to go? Like, is it that close to being ready?
It's ready.
Okay.
We just got to do the strategy part, and there, like, the odds of me having sleeping, not sleeping, are way higher than me sleeping.
Yes.
In the next 24 hours. Well,
it's your Super Bowl, right? This is what it all comes down to. Appreciate the time. I know we'll talk to you again a couple more times this weekend, but appreciate the time, and good luck on Friday and Saturday. Thank you, Todd.
Okay. Thanks for having me.